The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Olé!
Let me tell you about who deserves a shot at the United States heavyweight.
Let's hear it.
I'm the champion. I ought to know. You know, I've been sizing up guys since I came to the WCW. And I think the one guy that stands out the most, the guy that I think has earned a title shot, El Dandy, I think you're a heck of a wrestler. You're a great technician in the ring, and you're a jam-up guy. Whoa. I don't see any reason.
Wait a minute. El Dandy has been wrestling in the cruiserweight division here. Please.
He's a great wrestler.
He's a great wrestler, but my goodness sakes, at 50 pounds
who
difference.
Who are you to doubt El Dandy? Because this guy's a serious professional.
Well, let's talk about some serious
contenders. How about hypnosis? Let's get thrown.
Psychosis? Psychosis?
Whatever. He's a great wrestler.
Hello, and welcome to episode 155 of the WrestleCast. I'm your host, Don DeLaRente, and I'm joined this week by Shaz. How are you, Shaz?
Hi.
Glad to have you back on.
Been a while.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has. Let the people know where they can follow you on Twitter and all that good stuff.
One star, 2-3. Always That's... Shaz. I'll change the last name, but Shaz is always there.
And star with two R's. Double R. And we're also joined tonight by my man Anthony. What's going on, Ant?
What's up? I still got a hangover from my own stuff, so.
Let everybody know where they can follow you on Twitter, man.
Y'all can follow me and my wrestling rants at Brooklyn Sun on Twitter.
All right. Now everybody knows you can follow the WrestleCast at the WrestleCast on Twitter. You can also follow me at Don DeLaRente. WrestleCast is brought to you by CSPN. You can follow us and listen to us at www.cspn.us. You can also find us on wrestlecast.tumblr.com. You can also listen to us through iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher Radio. So, just like Anthony alluded to, we had Hell in a Cell this past Sunday, so we'll get right into that review. We had the hashtag #SayNoToPreshows. As we had the Hype Bros versus Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin. Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable get the win with their version of the Doomsday Device. Of course, got some more tension teased between the Hype Bros as they had some miscommunication, which led to them getting pinned and losing the match. And they've been on like a, you know, 2-month losing streak here. So we'll start with you, Shaz. If you got to see the pre-show, what were your thoughts of Gable and Benjamin? How are they looking to you?
I mean, they look good. I'm not particularly excited about their partnership right now. Kind of like you
What's
took one guy and
you?
Put another one in, but I don't know. I just don't feel the same chemistry as before. But, you know, it's a different team. You just got to get used to it.
Right.
Because Benjamin's Ant. Just back, so.
Yeah. Ant, what about you, man?
Oh, man. All right. So that match... I mean, we're still getting used to Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin. Let me say this. Chad Gable, I think, is between him and Jason Jordan. Chad Gable's more like Kurt Angle.
He is.
I keep pointing that out. Like, I don't, like, unlike everybody else, I see Chad Gable as Kurt Angle 2.0. So, but him and Shelton, they're starting to groove a little bit. They're still a little off. There's something, I think they need some time to. I think they need time on the mic to better stay with their what their intentions are. So I think them jumping into this after the win on Sunday, I think, and after this Tuesday win in that fatal four way, I think this is a good thing for them to jump right into a good program with the Usos, or should I say the Trap Usos. So yeah, they just got to get more TV time and hopefully they can develop their tag team chemistry and character with the Usos.
Right. Yeah. They still got a lot of potential. I think that, like you alluded to, it's going to be a lot of fun with them, the Usos, once they start having their matches. And hopefully the promo battle is just as good as well. So then, of course, we move into the main part of the pay-per-view. Hashtag Cell Therapy Matters. Thank you for everybody who joined us this past Sunday for our live tweet, as always. Thank you for sharing your commentary with color. And so, speaking of the Usos, first match out the gate, the curtain jerker. If you can't be last, you want to be first. We get the Usos versus the New Day. Hell in a Cell for the SmackDown Tag Team titles. Just too many spots to actually, you know, give you a full rundown. But the Usos got the win as they hit the double Usos splash on Xavier Woods when he had a chair on top of him. And the Usos reclaim the SmackDown Tag Team titles to become 5-time Tag Team champions. So, Ms. Shaz, we'll start with you. Your thoughts, opinions, concerns?
In a way, I kind of hate that their feud is ending. I mean, it was 4 months of them pulling that off. That's incredible, especially considering today's times. You can't get past 3 weeks before you're tired of it. And it was just so much happening during the match. I couldn't even get up and go get some water, which is usually shocking because I'll get up in a minute.
Anthony, your analysis of Usos and New Day, Hell in a Cell.
All right. Where should we start? First of all, I want to say this, and maybe some people agree with me out there. I think that's a top five Hell in a Cell match. Like, holy shit, you take two completely different teams with the Usos and their new character. I mean, it's not new, but new for new people who's tuning in. Then you take a team like the New Day, this feud that they've had has been, I think, in the landscape of where it is in WWE, I think it's one of the greatest feuds, as tag teams that they've had, and to cap it off with the Hell in a Cell match, to match their creativity in this cell match, and to see, well, first of all, one of the MVPs of the Hell in a Cell match was Xavier Woods, because we never seen that level of intensity out of Xavier Woods. Like he brings it, you know, but that match, the psychology of that match between him, we saw shades of Big E Langston come back in that cell match. You know, you saw the Usos really tap into that ferocity, to some of the sequences in the match between having Xavier Woods hang by the ring post with handcuffs, between Big E's dives. It's just like that whole match. Like, you can't get any better with that match. Like, I think that those two teams set the bar for tag team wrestling in WWE, and to see their entire feud, like, if you're any other tag team in either NXT, Raw, or SmackDown, you watch those two tag teams feud for 4 months. If that don't motivate you to want to bring your A game to WWE as a tag team, I don't know what will. Like that, and I was talking with friends. I thought, to be honest, I thought that they should have main evented Hell in a Cell.
Oh man, you know that wasn't gonna happen with. McMahon was on the card.
Yeah, but I'm like, yo, their match, like, I thought, and I think their match was better than the KO Shane match. Like, don't get me wrong, like, they, you know, Shane and KO brought it, but the Usos New Day match, man, you could put that up there and let that be a top five Hell in a Cell match.
Oh yeah,
of all time.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the better ones that they've had for sure. And like you said, the creativity with the weapons, they used a bunch of kendo sticks and handcuffs and trombones and cymbals and cowbells and gongs. So, just the way that they had to make it completely different from the match that Shane and Owens had later, definitely spoke to their creativity and yeah, like you said, definitely top five Hell in a Cell match.
Yeah. Like, after that match, I was like, who the hell's going to follow that? Good luck.
Rusev and Randy Orton got that short straw. Rusev goes to give Orton the accolade, but Orton is able to escape, and he hits the RK out of nowhere, and he gets the win. I was disappointed there was no Aiden English, like, run-in, or at least didn't come down with him at ringside to kind of, you know, that pairing's been kind of, for me, they've been, you know, one of the best things on SmackDown the past couple of weeks, and I was hoping that they would continue that here on the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, but didn't happen, and I guess Randy Orton is moving on because, you know, that's two out of three that he's gotten over Rusev, so, what do you feel about Rusev and Randy Orton there, Ms. Shaz? Did you have any excitement to see Randy Orton?
No, next.
anything you want to add?
Rusev deserves better than that.
Way better.
Like, because he is a top heel in the company, and the chemistry him and Aiden English have had in this short little stint of a feud, I thought like Rusev deserves a lot better than what he's been getting. Man, I don't know if it's like Randy Orton. There's something about like his like God. Any feud Randy Orton's been since he's been on SmackDown Live, to be honest, I ain't been interested in it. Like the only feud I was actually interested in because of, you know, who Randy is and his comments on Twitter and shit was when he was feuding with Jinder Mahal.
That was it.
Other than that, his feud with Shinsuke and his feud with Rusev, he ain't helping. He is not helping the situation. Because, you know, the thing is, it's when Mark Henry, being a veteran, was on the active roster, and he, like, being that he's a vet, like, he helped a lot of guys he worked with get over and, mm-hmm. like, make the feuds interesting. But Randy, and I think I can speak for everybody, ain't nobody interested in any feud Randy's been in, you know?
Yeah. He might be, they might have more potential players for him over there on Raw, it seems like, right now, because, like you said, yeah, he's been kind of stale with his SmackDown things going on, I guess, ever since the House of Horrors with Bray at WrestleMania.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's kind of taken a downhill turn. They both have, really, actually.
Yeah. I don't know.
Happened at that crossroads, but it.
Yeah, like, I don't know why. Yeah, I don't know why they even took the title off of Bray. Because, Randy, I'm like, what the hell happened to Randy Orton? Why did he get so goddamn boring? I don't get it. And, you know, it's like, do we put him back as a heel? Do we keep him as a heel? He's a face. We're like, what the fuck do we, what the hell?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where they go with him coming forward. Because, you know, on SmackDown right now, there's just not a lot of, you know, baby faces. There's a lot of heels, but not a lot of baby faces. And so you're going to have to be interesting to see if they can kind of keep Randy Orton kind of propped up as somewhere one of their top baby faces and see who he gets.
Yeah, because if I was like any of the writers, man, I would just let Rusev go ape shit and just like really take it to rent. Like, I wish that would have happened where he just went ape shit and like just smashed Randy Orton. Like, completely, like, when he go back to Rusev of old, like, when he used to spin kick motherfuckers out their boots, and motherfuckers had to go and get a tag team partner or try to sneak up on him or whatever, like, that's the heel I wish Rusev would be on SmackDown, not this guy that keeps losing to Randy Orton. Like, and Rusev's talented. I don't know what they're doing, and I don't know if, like, because some's telling me, like, Rusev is just, like, he's had it with these stupid feuds. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see kind of how they spin him off, too. Everybody on SmackDown right now is kind of, like, transitioning into new stuff. So it's going to be interesting when they, you know, get ready to build up. I think Clash of Champions is going to be their next one to kind of spin up to see, you know, who's going to be faced off with who. Yeah. We had a triple threat as Ty Dillinger was added during the pre-show to the United States title match. So now it became a three-way as we had Ty Dillinger, Baron Corbin, and AJ Styles face off. AJ Styles hits Dillinger with a phenomenal forearm, but Baron Corbin literally kicked AJ Styles in the face, kicked him out of the ring. Corbin covers Dillinger, and Baron Corbin is the new United States champion. So I thought it was pretty decent match. It was really a lot more entertaining with Ty Dillinger in there than if it would have been just Baron and AJ, I think Ty added a element that the match definitely needed. It's probably about the third best match on the card to me. It was surprisingly good. I think a lot of people were kind of shocked to see how well this match went off. And I think Ty Dillinger acquitted himself pretty well. People are getting into him and kind of understanding what he's about. So I thought it was a good showing for him. And Baron Corbin, man, he's got a chance to be a champion and run with the title, and hopefully he can kind of get his Twitter persona and that type of person that he is on Twitter, who's very entertaining. Maybe he can get that over on TV a little bit and people won't call him Boring Corbin. Shout out to Jade to Max. So, Ant, I'll let you start this time. Your kind of thoughts on this one?
I'm happy Big Banta won, finally. You know, because after that Money in the Bank, briefcase embarrassment. I was like, oh god, they gotta give him something to make up for that. And now I'm glad he finally got the U.S. title. That last minute play call adding Ty Dillinger to that match. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that from SmackDown. And I think we're gonna start to see more of Ty Dillinger now. They got a solid program. They got like a little thing going on between him and Big Banter. So hopefully now Baron Corbin now ups his game now, because now you got the U.S. title. You know, the last two holders of the U.S. title, they brought their A game. So hopefully he could bring his. I thought the match was good. It was nice. It's a nice segue. I would have rather that, like if I had the flip-flop matches, I'd have put that second instead of the Rusev match, because it was like nobody wanted to watch that, honestly. Right. No, like I would have swapped. But other than that, yeah, good effort on all three gentlemen. AJ Styles always bringing it. That's mm-hmm. never a and I like that Baron Corbin, despite his size, is using intelligence in the ring. Like I like you don't see that too much in today's landscape. Like he's a menacing guy, but he's got intelligence. His character's got intelligence. So good on Baron Corbin. I hope he don't drop the ball. I hope he, you know, takes his game to another level now.
Okay, Charles, give me some thoughts.
It was good to see him step up. He seemed a little more focused as far as being mean. It wasn't coming off as like a whole bunch of talk and then falling flat on your face. So I appreciated that. But yeah, it was a good match. I actually liked the way it was, because I don't think it would have come off as good if it come right after New Day and Usos. So I'm okay with where they placed it.
Right.
I got a chance to go up, take a nap, come back, enjoy this match, prepare for the next.
We get Charlotte versus Natty for the SmackDown Women's title. And the story of this match is Natty is going after Charlotte's knee. She's trying to, of course, soften her up for the sharpshooter. It gets a little too hot in the kitchen for Natty after she gets Charlotte does the moonsault on the outside. Natty gets back to her feet, finds a chair, hits Charlotte on the injured knee with the chair. Natty gets disqualified and retains the SmackDown Women's title. I was looking for a little bit more from these two, considering I'm the NXT guy and have seen them like 3-4 years ago when Charlotte wasn't quite as good as she is now.
Yeah.
Yeah, go at it, and they have, you know, a pretty epic match. But I guess this is just them advancing the story. So, you know, we'll kind of see what they do for the next pay-per-view, how that one goes. No Carmella, she wasn't even sniffing around. So that was kind of, I thought, maybe a little something they could have done to kind of spice it up a little bit. You know, have her kind of snooping around, maybe be at ringside, maybe be on commentary. Of course, you know, always with the tease to the cash in at any second. So we'll kind of see, wait and see approach on this, kind of see what they do on the next big event. So anybody would just jump in with your thoughts on this one?
This match, I wasn't really feeling it, considering, you know, how usually the women over in SmackDown, they usually bring it in each match. It's just like after SummerSlam, they've been on a little slump in pay-per-views. Hopefully by Clash of Champions, they get it together. Also found it odd that Carmella ain't sniffing around with the Money in the Bank briefcase. Because, I don't know if these wrestlers are going back and watching tape, but I think one of the superstars that like was really, you know, instrumental with the Money in the Bank was Edge, you know. So I don't know. Hopefully, again, they should be having Carmella sniffing out. Maybe they got bigger plans. Maybe because I know we got Clash of Champions. Maybe she might cash it in because Starrcade is also coming up. So I don't know if they're gonna do anything with that.
As of right now, that's just gonna be a regular old house show, a bigger house show than normal. They don't have any plans to broadcast it.
Shit, I wish they would broadcast Starrcade, to be honest. But like you said, this is just an advancement of the story. But after SummerSlam match wasn't feeling that SmackDown SummerSlam match. So they hopefully Clash of Champions, they let the women over SmackDown bring it. So
all right, Shaz, any
Felt like a regular SmackDown match. It wasn't anything spectacular or extra. Like a regular show match.
Yeah, that might have been just, you know, kind of the way they played it, just to, you know, like we're saying, just kind of give them enough that we can all digest what happened and then, you know, build a story later. And Charlotte has a reason to keep pursuing the title. Then we get our fashion files that we've been promised for the past 2 weeks on SmackDown that we didn't get. So we got it here. The Ascension comes in. Basically, you know, they're trying to be friends, literally. And Breezango's like, nah, we're not cool with that. They got a new case, and it's going to be called, what, Pope Fashion? So that'll be starting up on SmackDown, I guess, in a couple of weeks. So we'll see where that goes with Fashion Files and Breezango. Then we got our WWE title match, as we got Nakamura versus Jinder Mahal. Nakamura is going for a second Kinshasa on Jinder, but Jinder moves and Nakamura hits his knee on the turnbuckle. Jinder then hits the Colossus on Nakamura and gets the pin clean in the middle to retain the WWE title. So Jinder's still never hindered Jinder. Jinder gang still running strong. Singh brothers got their physicality in, and then they got sent to the back. So, you know, for them that was quite a night off because they didn't get tossed around or didn't get kicked in the head. So curious booking, but they've got bigger plans with Jinder. They're going to India in December. He just left this week to go do the promo for it. So if you think of the business sense of it, that looks like it could be, a reason why the booking went the way it did. But I'm going to ask y'all a different question. Everybody is kind of lukewarm on Jinder. How do y'all feel about Nakamura?
WWE's got to do something with Nakamura. Holy shit. He was hot over at NXT, and then when he comes over to the main roster, I'm like, what the fuck is going on? How did they fuck this up? I don't get it.
Well, when he was at NXT, he had Samoa Joe and as his main foil there for a large part of it, and we all know how good Samoa Joe is. It's just I think he's the type of guy who needs the correct dance partner to bring the best out of him. And I don't think that, well, obviously, Dolph Ziggler and Jinder Mahal are not it.
No. And no matter how many times Dolph says he's the best wrestler and this, that, and the third, man, I would have picked after that one match, I'd have been like, yo, Dolph, you got to go sit down because you did not do that with Shinsuke. Like, God, holy, like, in a way, I wish Samoa Joe was on SmackDown.
Mm-hmm. It might be what they need to do is bring him to SmackDown and let them go up against each other. That's about all we got left now.
Yeah, because
it's sinking fast.
Yeah, because if shit gets worse, I could see Nakamura leaving the company and going back to New Japan Pro Wrestling.
I think he is. I think he's bored.
Yeah, because they're not. And this, I mean, Jinder, I mean, he's just getting back into things. And again, this is what I was talking about this with somebody on Twitter the other day. WWE needs to bring back a lot of their veterans to guide the youth into going into these programs and making sure like the youth knows how to make these feuds interesting, because this is a sink or swim situation for Jinder. You know, coming back after he got kicked out. I mean, after he left, he came back. You know, they're like, hey, you know, you work hard, you transformed your body. So we're going to just throw you in this WWE championship picture with no guidance. I feel like Jinder's getting no guidance from any of the... I think if... Because rumor is AJ Styles is supposed to be his next challenger. So I think... hopefully this saves Jinder. Because this feud didn't... And I hate... And I'm riding with Jinder and Shinsuke, but this feud... Oh, man.
It was a bad look for Jinder. Because when he took that turn where they start talking about Nakamura's looks, it was like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah, and I'm not, a bad turn. And yeah, it's like, I get it, like, because lately WWE's going back to everybody being spicy, but I'm just like, ooh, y'all cutting it close with this one. In today's landscape, it was not a good look on Jinder. Whoever wrote that, I would be like, yo, you ain't writing for a while. You fired.
And what And what sucked is the very night he cut that very first where he went too far on the racist promo. Mm-hmm. He was getting cheered when he came out. It was the first time that he actually had like some positive crowd reaction too. People were like finally starting mm-hmm. to like actually get into him yeah. as being the champion. And then he goes out there and does that, and then it just went, all that just went away.
Yeah, I don't think WWE's writers are in tune with one, their audience, and two, what's going on culturally
at all.
The writers, dude. Here's the thing: writers write. But whatever they write, they're doing Monday Night Raw. They're writing Monday Night Raw right now to present it to Vince on Friday. Vince may see it on Friday and look over it and say, huh, everything's good. So they go home on the weekend, put the feet up, everything's good. They get to the building on Monday, Vince looks at it again, shit, he might have them change 4 or 5 segments.
Yeah. Well, in that case, then Vince has got to raise up.
Somebody said that they'll get like changes in the script like right before they go out. You right? Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you know that gender thing, man. I'm like, fuck gender. Like you couldn't say no to this.
So right.
And what makes it bad is he's a brown skinned wrestler. Mm-hmm. Like, oh.
Well, I could understand. I understood what they were trying to do. They just didn't execute it as well as mm-hmm. they could have
yeah.
with him saying, you know, hey, all of y'all are down on me because, you know, I look different. I sound different, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden now once he gets to the top and he gets that position of power, now all of a sudden he turns into the person that he was claiming he hated the most.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so I understood it. It was good. And they had to change up the promo a little bit because, I mean, now that he was a champion, he can't go off of that, you know, xenophobia full time again like he was doing. So I understood what they tried to do. They just executed it very poorly.
Yeah, I think, and you know what, I think going now with you, I even think with that, they should, instead of scripting it for gender, just like, yo, gender, we're going to give you this opportunity. Go off script one time. Like, just give them bullet points and be like, yo, just hit this, but we want you to, like, put your, because like this, and it sounded like that racist promo, he did not mean it. Like I could tell he did not mean it. Just like delivery mm-hmm. and execution, mm-hmm. you could tell he was that was bad.
We're comfortable.
No, he was
looked uncomfortable.
Yeah, I was like, oh my god, can we cut the commercial break? Because man.
I did cut the commercial break because I just changed the channel when it happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And they got to do something. They got to do something with Shinsuke, man, because I'm like, mm-hmm. he's slowly becoming a guy that I don't want to watch.
He's on TV too much.
Yeah. Like, he should be a special attraction like Samoa Joe over on the road.
Mm-hmm. They're just exposing him too much, and he doesn't have that specialness to him that he should have. It should always be a big deal to see him. But we get a Kevin Owens backstage promo with Kayla. Hey, Kayla. How you doing? Creepcast. About his match later tonight with Shane, Hell in a Cell. And then we get the stinker match of the night, Bobby Roode versus Dolph Ziggler. Dolph runs Roode into the turnbuckle and rolls him up, but Roode rolls through and rolls up Ziggler. Ziggler rolls through that roll up, and then Roode rolls Ziggler back up, pulls the tights, gets the pin, and then right after that pinfall, Ziggler gives Bobby Roode the zigzag, and that was all, folks. Another underwhelming Dolph Ziggler match against somebody making their, you know, big time debut on a pay per view from NXT. So, you know, there used to be a time like 3-4 years ago when, you know, Dolph Ziggler was the perfect man for this spot. But here lately, he's fallen on hard times and kind of fallen off. And he's not doing it for anybody that, like, you know, like they're thinking he would. You figure, like, oh, Dolph Ziggler, they'll have a 4-star match. They'll have an easy 4-star match. But it's just not coming off that way right now with Dolph.
Well, he's lost. So how is he going to help anybody else?
Yeah, like he's lost. I don't know. He doesn't have a place in WWE. I don't know how the hell he was supposed to help Bobby Roode. Like, again, Ziggler's I don't see him as the premier wrestler anymore. And that's like the whole, like, he's got the in-ring skills. But as far as storytelling, helping to elevate the talent coming in, because he didn't do it for Shinsuke. That was That match was garbage. And then this match with Bobby Roode, he didn't perform to the level we thought, you know, Dolph Ziggler is able to perform. So I think going forward, anytime they bring in a new NXT superstar, they need to just like avoid Dolph Ziggler at all costs. Because Dolph Ziggler's last two matches with NXT talent has not been great at all. And no one's raving about Dolph Ziggler's matches. In fact, even on between the Wrestling Inc. podcast, between even Dave Metzler, you know, even fans in general, they are not like, no one's like saying, oh, Dolph Ziggler, any match, like Dolph Ziggler's last great match was against The Miz for the Intercontinental Championship. Ever since then, you know, it's like, what the fuck are you doing, Dolph? I think either Dolph needs to take some time away, or just like whenever they bring new talent, just like, yo, stay clear of Dolph Ziggler. Let's put you in a fresh match with someone else, like a Baron Corbin or a Ty Dillinger or whatever. Let them figure it out, because just based on what Dolph Ziggler is doing, I don't think he wants to help. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm getting from Dolph Ziggler. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
So then we move to our main event of the evening, as we had Shane McMahon versus Kevin Owens, Hell in a Cell, Falls Count Anywhere. Shane heads to the top of the cell to give Owens a big elbow through the announce table. At the last second, Owens moves, and Shane elbow drops the announce table, crashes and burns. Then we get a replay, and we see that Sami Zayn came to the rescue, and he moved Kevin Owens off the table. During the, you know, the aftermath of Shane, you know, crashing and burning, going through the announce table with the big elbow drop, all the paramedics and the, you know, stretcher comes out there to try to scrape him up off the ground. Sami Zayn then drags Kevin over to Shane, moves the medics out of the way. Zayn puts Owens on top of Shane, tells the ref to count. Owens gets the three count, and Kevin Owens is your winner. This was a lot better than Shane McMahon versus The Undertaker. The false count anywhere part of the match actually did kind of, you know, make it a better match, I guess, than the Undertaker match, because they didn't have to go out and necessarily go back in. Once they got out, they could stay out. I think everybody kind of felt that nervous energy for about 6 or 7 minutes when they were doing all those spots on top of the cage, because everybody remembers Mick Foley falling through the cage. Which wasn't supposed to happen at all, which was an unplanned spot, but became one of the most iconic images in WWE history. So now I think everybody kind of has in their mind, they kind of think like, oh, well, they're on top of the cage, somebody going to fall through. But luckily they didn't. They just did a bunch of big moves up there. Pop-up power bombs, suplexes, neck breakers. It's just a whole bunch of just crazy, crazy moves that they did on top of the cage. And then, of course, they... You know, Kevin Owens crashes through an announce table. Didn't see that coming. Knew Shane would probably do it, but didn't think we'd get two big crash and burn spots, but we did. The speed at which freaking Shane McMahon was coming down out that sky, boy, he was moving. Just, you know, Kevin Owens with the great heel tactics in the beginning of the match. Of course, Shane's got his family out there, his sons and his wife in the front row. Kevin Owens gets over in this Hell in a Cell right in front of him, starts taunting. You know, Shane rubs his face all up on the cage in front of him or whatever. And then, you know, once he knocks Shane down, he starts doing the Shane McMahon little money dance in front of his kids and his wife. Mm-hmm. Kevin Owens is the best.
Yeah. That match, it was a fun match. At the top of the cell, I damn near lost my shit, because I'm like, one of these motherfuckers is going to go through the cell. And Shane, oh, man, I think Shane likes doing these kinds of matches. He just gets a kick out of it. I don't know if he's got a death warrant or if he's trying to top what Mick Foley's been doing or whatever, but I get the sense Shane likes doing these kinds of matches and elevating these. It's just working with the talent. I think low-key wants to, if he didn't have to play the GM role, he would be an active wrestler. Because with his matches with AJ, Kevin Owens, I think he's a fan of like the crop of talent that he him and Daniel Bryan have the pleasure of working with. So I get that from this Hell in a Cell match. He enjoyed working with Kevin Owens, you know. And I'm glad they finally got Sami Zayn in the program and heel turn, because, God, he was suffering.
Yeah, he really was. Shaz, your thoughts?
I need them to, like, pay for my next doctor's appointment, because all of that on top of the cage stressed me out. And I just didn't even know what to do with all that. Like everyone said, I kept expecting them to fall through, because that was just a lot. I mean, with the powerbomb alone, like, I don't need to see that again. Of course, you know Shane is going to jump off the cage, but, no. I'm like, dude, you're not 20 anymore. Kind of take it down a notch, just a little bit.
Nah, Shane McMahon gonna go hard. If he is in the match, he going hard.
Yeah, that's him being him. He's more of a wrestler than he is an executive. He always has been, so.
Yeah, I think, like, long term, I think they should just put Shane on the main roster. Like, if there's an opportunity to do that, like, just put him on the main roster, because he enjoys getting out there and performing, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm like, we might as well just give him that platform. Be like, yo, you're not GM no more. You're on the active roster. I mean, he could go.
But he's 48 now. If he wouldn't have taken that long 15-year absence out of the company, you might have been able to get away with that then. But not now, though. So
no, he's an Undertaker years now. So maybe they'll get the big dog to retire him.
So that was Hell in a Cell. Basically, kind of like, you know, the first, like I said, the opening match, the main event, and then the triple threat for the U.S. title were the real standout matches. Everything else in the middle was just kind of, you know, blah. Just kind of advanced, ending a couple of storylines and advancing the women's title storyline. So not a bad overall show. I think it got like a B, but that was just on the strength of those final two matches for sure. The two cell matches for sure. Next up, we'll go to Monday Night Raw. The Miz starts off the show. The Miz awards. He's got the Mizzies out there. He awards a Mizzy to Bo Dallas, and then one to Curtis Axel for their parts. And, I think he gave Curtis Axel one for his courage, I think, is what's one he got. Then he gives another set of Mizzies to The Bar, Sheamus and Cesaro, for their best supporting actors for their help last week in destroying Roman Reigns. Then the Miz awards himself a Mizzy for the leading role in, leading the charge to beat down Roman 2 weeks in a row. Then all of a sudden, Roman pops out. He talks a little trash. The Miz says, man, you ain't going to do nothing. It's three of us, four of us, one of you. And even if your little friends come out, it's still 4-on-3. You know, he said, I heard some rumors that y'all trying to get back together. And then Roman says, who said anything about some rumors? First Dean comes out, then Seth comes out, and the crowd is going redonkulous. And they make their way down to the ring to, you know, formally kick some ass. Miz gets the hell up out the ring, watches the Bar and Curtis Axel get destroyed by the Shield. Once the Shield are done with them, they chase Miz, get him in the ring, and they proceed to beat the Miz down. They give him the Snowmaker. Then they give him the Dirty Deeds. They give him a spear. And then for good measure, they gave him the Shield Triple Powerbomb. And then, as what have happened over the last 2 weeks, when they had got beaten down, the Shield stands over the Miz, and they do the triple fist bump. And it is officially on, and these people and this crowd could not have been happier that they bought tickets to Monday Night Raw.
It was everything I needed.
Yo, I thought after that, I was like, yo, all right, show's off. All right, that's it. That's it. let's just move on next week with the with everything else, because I'm like, oh, like I lost my shit. I was like, all right, we in it now. We in it.
I see. As everybody does, or most people do, when I took my break, it was during the time where they were coming in, the Nexus and the Shield and all that. I missed all that, so I don't have the same reverence for the Shield that everybody else does. I, I understand it, but I don't have that emotional connection that most wrestling fans do.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, it's just kind of like, oh, okay, they're back together again. This is the WWE's big joker. And whenever they, you know, need something that they know is going to be a hit, they can always go back to this. And so they decide to pull it out. Basically, this is the Roman Reigns rehab plan. Part three, as they're trying to, you know, curry him some favor with the crowd, and Roman is all the way over as a babyface, whereas No Shield Roman is still struggling. So,
yeah, like that. It's a weird dynamic. I'm like, it's weird,
it's Hoodie Mello versus regular Mello.
Yeah, hopefully after this, they let just. Because I'm not going to lie, as an individual, like, Roman's improved. Like, after that match at WrestleMania, man, he's been up in his game. And I think, you know, with the Cena feud, they finally got him, you know, more comfortable with the mic and everything. It's just now they got to find a way to help him put it together. Maybe, like I said, I think he need more feuds where they're going to, they need to bring it out. Who knows? Maybe this feud will do them some good. This feud that the Shield is going to go through with the Miz and Braun Strowman is going to be a car crash. So hopefully, I think Raw's trying to top Hell in a Cell, because you can't tell me after what between those two Cell matches that the Raw roster is not looking like, oh shit, nah, we got to top this at TLC now.
Mm-hmm.
So now, right. now we're really getting that brand warfare. We're like, all right, who's going to put on the better pay-per-view main events now? So I think after watching Hell in a Cell, they decide, all right, we need to pull this trigger now with the Shield reunion. Because honestly, I would rather the Shield battle Finn Balor and Gallows and Anderson, because, you know, they're more legit opponents and intriguing opponents that the Shield would have trouble with. Instead of, you know, wasting this reunion with, like, don't get me wrong, Miz is good. Miz is like one of the best talkers in WWE right now. But I think they should have pulled the trigger with the whole club thing. Wellness. But hey, beggars can't be choosers, and I think this is going to be a good feud.
All right, Shaz, your thoughts? Anything else you'd like to add before we move on?
I've been waiting on it. I'm glad it finally happened because I was tired.
All right,
and
so
what happened next was even better. It just went back to how they used to be, where they just went in attack mode and went after everybody. But I know you're getting to that, so.
We get Jason Jordan versus Carl Anderson. Jason Jordan wins with the pop-up netbreaker. Nothing special. I have a new motto. Make the Good Brothers great again. Please, WWE, please.
Yeah.
Backstage, The Miz is getting treatment. From getting beat down, Kurt Angle comes in and he makes the main event for TLC, the Shield versus the Miz and the Bar in a table, ladders, chairs, cage match. Next, we get Elias. He comes out, sing his song, when Titus comes out with the banjo. He does his own song, which is all leading up to the introduction of Apollo Crews. So once again, we get Elias versus Apollo Crews. Elias drapes Crews' neck across the second rope. Then Elias hits the drift away, and he gets the win for the third straight time. Elias is good. He's starting to get over with the people. They get it with the guitar and everything. You know, his in-ring could, you know, step up a little taste here or there, but I think that's getting a little bit stronger too. And, you know, it was, you know, Apollo Crews. He had a little slight run there with the Titus Worldwide thing, and Tozawa ended up outshining him, and then they took the belt off Tozawa, and Titus Worldwide's kind of been put on the back burner here. And Shaz, it's funny because we were talking about this the last time you were on the show. He's still the same dude that's walking around smiling.
Always
too much.
Smiling.
Smiling.
Why are you smiling?
Like, holy shit.
Smiling to cover the pain. I don't know.
Nah, like, yo, something is, like, oh, God. Apollo Crews is a talented guy. I don't know why they got him smiling and going 0-3 against Elias Sampson. Like, this motherfucker is Bobby Lashley he's Bobby Lashley Jr. Like, this man should be whooping ass and not smiling about it. Like, it's annoying me.
Yeah, yeah. He's getting to the point where he needs to get, just like I said last time Shaz was on the episode, he needs a gimmick. He needs a mm-hmm. pure gimmick. He needs to be, you know, a cocky type of guy, or he just needs some type of personality, something that can make you invest, because his in-ring work will it's capture solid. You. Yeah, yeah. He can capture you by wrestling. It's just that's that he doesn't have anything else. Guy,
that's what they always do when it comes to the wrestling guy. They bring him in that he can wrestle, and there's nothing else outside of that. And you're bored after a while.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, I think he should just snap one time and just, like, start destroying motherfuckers. Like, because he's one of the best athletes on that roster, and I think this feud ain't doing him no justice at all. Like, he just need one time, just snap.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, maybe put Elias Samson through a table, or just take somebody, just start destroying motherfuckers.
Enzo comes out, does his promo. He's, you know, doing the normal Enzo thing. That, of course, brings Kurt Angle out, because, you know, Kurt Angle did basically make a edict that none of the cruiserweights could get a match with Enzo, because they all touched him 2 weeks ago during his celebration. And he was bragging and boasting about that. But he said that he was going to make a match tonight between Kalisto and Enzo for the Cruiserweight title. Enzo kind of hesitates, and then he says he'll agree to do the match only on one condition, if it's the main event. And Kurt Angle agrees. And right before he leaves, though, Kurt Angle gets the last word and says, it's going to be a handicap match. Or lumberjack match, excuse me, not a handicap match. Lumberjack match, with all the cruiserweight division being the lumberjacks. So get set up for a main event. Then we have Braun Strowman versus Matt Hardy. Braun gets the win with the running power slam. Matt Hardy actually got in more offense than I thought he would, so that was pretty cool for him. Braun picks up Hardy and heads to the back. All of a sudden, when he's going up the ramp, he gets confronted by the Shield. Braun to have a stare down for a minute. Braun goes after Roman, and it's on. The numbers game is too great, though, and the Shield end up beating down Braun Strowman. Then the Shield give Braun the Shield powerbomb through the announce table. So, Shaz, this is what you were referring to earlier, as they got back to their old ways of, you know, just going after everybody. Now, since I missed that, you know, that whole time frame, kind of did they have a discretion? Were they using discretion, or was it? You know, do you have to cross them before they came down and beat you down, or was it just that if it felt like you need to get beat up, they just gonna beat you up?
Whoever they had to go after, they went after you where you stood, backstage, wherever. If they had to sneak attack and get you, they would do that. And so that's what it felt like, just coming out of the woodwork, knowing I got to take you out, and coming in and doing that and just wrecking shop. And I kind of missed that. I think that's what everybody got excited about when they showed up, was that it felt like, okay, now we're going to go to this now, except that's not what WWE did, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they jumped. No, I was just laughing because when they came out and jumped the Braun Strowman, I was like, I was just in tears. And then when they powerbombed through the table, he bounced off the stage. I was like, oh, shit.
I just didn't get, okay, they're already over. You don't need anything else to get them over.
Yeah.
Why do you got to sacrifice Braun? Person on your roster that's probably like the hottest person that's on your roster. He gets the biggest crowd reaction when he comes out. People are interested in everything he does.
Yeah.
So I didn't understand that.
Yeah, I kind of wish they should have just put that. You're right. They should. That was confusing, but and they should have put that honestly. They should have kept that for next week, because him and Roman, the beef is still on, so they got to duke it out in a steel cage. So, they should have kept it. But I mean, you know, I guess they wanted to pull the trigger and let people know, hey, it's on. Maybe get, because Braun don't have no opponents for opponents for the pay per view. So they're like, all right, let's just throw him in there, see what happens. And now that Braun's in the TLC match, it's going to be a car crash. And again, they don't have anybody because Samoa Joe's out until
right.
I think he's coming back. They said maybe the end of the month or something. I'm not too sure. So, and yeah, they got to do something with Braun. You just can't have him off of pay per view. Or I mean, you could just have him as a special attraction, and then after the Shield thing, maybe him and Roman keep going back at it because they got good chemistry together, and they could still squeeze a dollar out of that before Survivor Series. So, you know. Right.
The way that Braun got added into the match was Miz comes in the Angle's office and suggests that Kurt hold Dean to his word because they showed the Miz in the back, you know, after they had destroyed Strowman, and they were kind of, you know, bragging and feeling themselves. And Dean uttered the words that they can defeat any 4, 5, or 6 men. So the Miz pressures Angle into it. And Miz basically says that he's already found his fourth member, and his fourth member was Braun. Braun busts down the door and he just stares menacingly at Kurt Angle. So now Braun has been added to the TLC main event. We had a Mickie James promo on Alexa Bliss on how age is nothing but a number. Alexa comes out and she has a video prepared to remind the fans about Mickie James' career. Of course, it's a black and white, you know, highlight reel set to the old time 19 teens music, you know, as a soundtrack. You know, Mickey, you know, makes a rebuttal, challenges Alexa. Alexa, who wasn't dressed for fighting, come down to the ring, got a little bit too close, got yoked up into the ring. Mickey hit her with the chick kick. You know, Alexa rolls out and Mickey, you know, is standing tall in the middle of the ring. The promo really got people into the match, I think, more than they were maybe beforehand. I think last week they did the good job setting it up, but I think this week with Mickey coming out leading the promo to start out with, kind of definitely got people on board with this a lot more than they were maybe 2 weeks ago. So good showing by Mickie James. We get an Asuka video package followed by Bayley, Sasha, Alicia Fox, Dana, and Emma all wanted to face Asuka at TLC. So, of course, Kurt Angle, being the general manager that he is, says that they settle their differences in the ring, and he makes a fatal five-way where the winner will be Asuka's opponent. So, more typical booking of the women. You have your one main feud, and then they throw everybody else together in one big, you know, conglomerate, and they figure something out. Cedric Alexander and Mustafa Ali versus Jack Gallagher and Brian Kendrick. Brian Kendrick hits Mustafa Ali with a sliced berry at number 2, and Jack Gallagher and Brian Kendrick get the win. Most people were watching the match and was like, when did Jack Gallagher become heel? It's like, oh, yeah, we can tell who's not watching 205 Live every week. So I'm glad that they allowed. I'm glad they let Jack Gallagher wrestle on Raw so people could see the change in him. As now he, instead of coming out with those colorful striped tights that he used to wear, he's now wrestling in his street clothes, basically his three piece without the jacket, the vest, the pants, the shirt, and the Oxfords. So it's a very interesting look.
Yeah. They're going off this. I think somebody's been watching this Kingsman, so they're like, all right, let's give Jack Gallagher this Kingsman like look and everything. But yeah, this 205 thing. Yeah.
Then we get the worst part of the whole episode. Finn Balor comes down, cut a promo. He gets interrupted by Bray. Bray does some type of weird intersectional promo where he flips over and turns into Sister Abigail. And basically they're kind of like dual cutting this promo where it's cutting in and out of like Bray and Sister Abigail talking to Finn. And Finn is like literally in the ring just shook. Everything about this is awful to me. I'm usually not that guy that's like, oh, this is bad. I don't like it. But yeah, I don't like it. You've got people who could actually be Sister Abigail and not have Bray. I guess this is his answer to the Demon King, I guess. Ugh, I don't like it. He sounded like the Black Scorpion. No, he sounded like the Black Scorpion. It was just bad. Just so bad. So.
It was a bad Saturday night cartoon, like some shit you watch on Adult Swim. At this point, I'm just like, yo, shave Bray's beard and start over. Just like get it, like
just make him a baby face. Guys, so simple. They've exalted. If you're not going to bring the Wyatt family back, if you're not going to pair Bo Dallas up with him, just turn him into a babyface. It's time.
It's been beyond time. Like, okay, so they didn't want to keep him as WWE champion. All right, cool. He does the House of Horrors nonsense with Randy Orton. All right, whatever. You got to get that out. All right. They got to do something quick, because I can see Bray not being in WWE long. Because, like, there's so...
What the fuck?
And Bray, and I like Bray. It's just like, yo, y'all got to do something. Make him a babyface. Change his character. Do something. But like this sister, yo, I'm telling you right now. If he wanted to win a dress at the next pay per view, I'm done.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are getting to that edge with Bray, where they're losing faith in him, because you know. When we first started this podcast and I first started watching him, I thought his promos were excellent. The entrance was fantastic. Everything up until him actually wrestling in the ring was awesome. But his actual wrestling matches were flat, no matter who he was wrestling. John Cena, when they were doing the thing with Dean Ambrose, it was just flat. It's just like he couldn't get people into his match. Well, he kind of dialed down the promos a little bit, kind of cut out some of the crazy antics he was doing in his matches, and all of a sudden his matches started connecting a little bit more. And then, like you said, they finally put the title on him, and it looked like, okay, now we're finally about to get the Bray Wyatt everybody's been waiting 3 or 4 years for, but it never materialized. So, yeah, he's definitely in a transition spot right now where this should be signal, like, if he loses the Finn, this should signal him doing something different, going away for a few months and then maybe coming back.
I don't see them letting him win. I don't. Mm-mm.
No.
And just the fact that Flo is where he is and Bray is where he is, I never would have expected this, ever.
Yeah, yeah. No, and the next match at TLC, Finn's winning that, so.
All right, so we got Sasha Banks versus Dana versus Alicia Fox versus Bayley versus Emma. Winner faces Asuka at TLC.
You mean get their heads kicked in by Asuka at TLC?
Yeah. It's an elimination match, which they didn't explain until the first person got pinned, and then the match kept going, and Cole had to kind of like trip over himself to let everybody know that it was an elimination match. Well, Dana gets caught with the belly to belly, and she's the first person eliminated. Alicia Fox hits Bayley with the axe kick, and Alicia Fox eliminates Bayley. Sasha then gives Alicia the backstabber and the bank statement, which makes Alicia Fox tap. Then, right after that, Emma slides in, rolls up Sasha, and Emma gets the win, and she will get the chance to face Asuka at TLC.
Well, somebody had to be sacrificed.
Yeah.
She's good as anybody.
We're at the point now where nobody even got loud for Sasha Banks when she came out.
Yo, they destroyed that girl. Like that shit. That's another thing that pissed me off. Is like, how the hell did y'all let this happen to Sasha? Like, what the fuck?
That last 1 week title reign has done more damage to her than anything. That all the injuries, the time she missed with injuries and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It, it's just so sad to see the crowd just be, you know, don't care about her because she's. One of the best workers in the division.
Like, did she piss somebody off? Like, what? I don't get what's going on. Like, why they won't let her have a...
Vince. God. Vince thinks she's small. Vince doesn't like that she gets injured. So he doesn't let her be the best that she can be.
Well, Alexa Bliss is small, but like...
But Alexa Bliss don't get injured. See, the thing with Sasha is, the first time Sasha got the belt, what happened? She got injured. She had to get the belt up. Same thing with Finn. That's why they both in the same rut. It's because they got the chance to get the belt, and the one thing that you can't do is get injured. Yeah. Look at Dolph Ziggler. Look at his career. He got the belt, got a concussion, got the big gold belt, got a concussion.
There's like, nope.
Had to get the belt up, and his career has been in the trash ever since. So,
God, that's a Vince thing. Yeah, I could see a lot of talent going back to New Japan or wherever they were. Because
they're not doing anything with the women's division anyway, really.
No, because where the hell was Nia Jax at?
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, at this point, they have enough women. They could have tag teams, and they're not even doing that. They could have more than one feud going on. They don't do that.
Yeah. Like,
they're
at
just
this point.
Set us up.
Yeah. At this point, like, Nia Jax should be vying for the title, in my opinion. You know? Like,
she's
no.
What Braun is by now.
Yeah, she should be because she's the monster of the women's division. Like, she's athletic. She can wrestle. Although she's still green, like, she still can go. She can, oh my God, like, I'm like, y'all are wasting Nia Jax's time.
Well, it took the crowd a little bit longer to get with it, but
yeah. It wound up paying off.
Yeah, when they were teasing her and Alexa having maybe a pay-per-view match, the crowd was really getting into her. Like, when she wrestled Sasha, she did the little Sasha Banks slide, and then they came back the next week, the first week she wrestled Bayley, and she hurt Bayley, and she tied her hair up in the side ponytail. Then the next week she wrestled Sasha, she did the little Sasha Banks slide. I think everybody started to see her personality starting to come out, and they were like, oh, okay. Then they had her come out in her regular street clothes after she had did the New York Fashion Week on Raw. You know, she came out in her street clothes, and everybody got a different view of her, and she did the commentary, and they were going back and forth with Alexa Bliss, and I think they were like on the right path to making, you know, her a really big star. But, you know, her not really getting a true title shot has really kind of, you know, downgraded her push a little bit. So we'll see kind of where they go from here. Then we got our main event of the evening. We have Enzo versus Kalisto, cruiserweight title, a lumberjack match. This match was really kind of slow in the beginning. It didn't pick up until they were on the top rope, and Kalisto did a superplex. He superplexed Enzo into the crowd of cruiserweights who started fighting each other down below. So that was when the match started to pick up a little bit. Everybody kind of got interested after that big spot. Kalisto ends up hitting a super Salida del Sol off of the top rope to pin Enzo, and he is your new cruiserweight champion.
Now what?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Interesting. Well, they're going to wrestle again in 2 weeks.
Because I'm like, why? Why are they just going to take the title for Enzo at TLC?
Well, I'll give you some backstory, sir. The original creative for this match was supposed to be Enzo versus Neville in a lumberjack match. In Neville, according to all reports that are out there floating around the wrestling Twitter, is that Neville basically said, I'm out, dog. He's out. And he left Raw once he found out what the creative was for that night. So they insert Kalisto, and then they change the finish because Neville was supposed to lose to Enzo.
That's crazy.
So the follow up, Neville did not show up to 205 Live SmackDown on Tuesday, and there's rumors that he has asked for his release, and it just hasn't been granted yet. There hasn't been an official statement from WWE. But everybody's kind of speculating that that might have been the last straw for Neville in WWE. So it's a lot of speculation right now. There's nothing confirmed about him being released. But maybe it's the kind of situation that Austin Aries ran into where, you know, he was wrestling Neville. They were having pretty good matches. It seemed like it was time for him to win the title. And Austin Aries didn't. And then he was like, okay, well, that's cool. Can I go be on the main roster? And they were like, nope. And then he was like, okay, well, I'm out.
Who the? Oh, man. Yeah. You know, how can I say this? I'm not mad at WWE for inserting Enzo into the 205 Live roster. What I am mad at is that they let, and if it's true, they let one of their big talents of the roster leave. Like, what the hell? Mm-hmm. Like, how you just let him walk out the door? You know, and then have Kalisto win the title. Like, what the hell? Like, and don't get me wrong. I like Kalisto, but he shouldn't have won the belt that night. He should not have. They should have kept it on Enzo. Because now it's like, all right. So what's the use now?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, because yo, Enzo, not for nothing. He was cooking. He was cooking as champ. You know, people really getting behind the heel thing and being a heel and talking trash. It's like, all right. Cool. And then they go and pull this crap, and now Neville may or may not come back to WWE. I'm like, at that point, it's just like, yo, where do they go now? And now the whole roster got no, and I'm sorry, the whole roster got no other choice now to step up, because like, yep. You can't hide behind Neville no more. Ain't no more just wrestling now. If this is how it's going to be, ain't no more wrestling now. Ain't no more just wrestling. Like, you got to, like, Cedric Gallows, like, these guys going to have to take the, go grab that brass ring now.
Sash, give us some comments.
I don't think it was worth it to take it from Enzo just to stick it to Neville, because that's pretty much how it came across to me. Because he's mad that he's going to lose again, apparently. And then what do? Take the belt for Enzo and give it to Kalisto? I mean, if I'm already mad at you, that just made it worse.
Yeah.
And if any part of me wanted to come back, it's not going to happen now.
Yeah, because they could have kept the belt on Enzo and be like, all right, Neville, this is what you're going to do. You're going to win it back at TLC. You two guys going to have a match, and you win it back at TLC. Not embarrass him on Monday Night Raw by losing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, why are you going to spike? Like, and not for nothing, Kalisto don't put asses in seats. I'm sorry. We're gonna call it like it is. Kalisto, he can wrestle, but he can't talk.
Yep.
And that's where Enzo, and I thought the Enzo Neville feud, that for how short it was great. It was like, yo, you got two guys who can talk, and of course Neville's gonna carry him in the match. But you know, it's like, why WWE playing these games?
Yeah, and now what you gonna do with 205?
It's gonna be boring. Nobody's gonna watch it. Now.
I mean. Okay, who's watching it now? But still, any chance you had.
Nah, that's going
on. Yeah, it's gonna. Yeah, they're gonna have to. They're gonna have to do some saving face, and maybe they can get him to come back. Maybe they can get Mark Henry, Neville and Mark Henry are really tight, so maybe they can get Mark Henry to kind of smooth some things over, and get him back in the fold. But right now, Neville's situation is very much up in the air. So before we go into SmackDown, we're going to let everybody know that this podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible.com is offering a free audio download and a free 30-day trial. All you have to do is go to their site at www.audible.com/WrestleCast. And there you can choose from over 150,000 titles for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3. You can go get Jim Ross's latest book about his time in professional wrestling. You can also get Chris Jericho's brand new book. It's kind of like a, motivational, get your, life goals accomplished type book. You can get the Wrestlers Like Seagulls, James J. Dillon autobiography, which is one of the best wrestling autobiographies there is out there. So again, Audible.com is offering a free trial. Again, the URL is www.audibletrial.com/WrestleCast to get your free download and your free 30-day trial. I'm going to run through SmackDown, NXT, Lucha Underground kind of real fast here. Usos come out, quick opening promo. They basically, call out the New Day. Similar to Hardy Boys and Edge and Christian, they just wanted to say, hey, man, we respect y'all. We put it down. We had some classic matches. We the two best tag teams in this division. Every time we go at it, it's, Clash of the Titans epic. It's like Ali and Frazier. And basically, we wanted y'all to come out here so we could say that the rest of them tag teams in the back, they all suck. We legendary. And we just wanted to let y'all know that, we respect y'all for going toe-to-toe with us in Hell in a Cell. And, the only people who do so say could relate to them, because if y'all watch Talking Smack, I think it was Jay was all broke up. His elbow was all messed up. Mm-hmm. The other one, Jimmy, his eye was starting to swell. They were pretty banged up. So they were just basically saying that, their families and wives and kids and everybody was all concerned, and they were telling them that they were all right, but they really weren't. And they said the only people who actually knew what they were feeling was the New Day. And, so they just wanted to give big ups to them. And before, of course, they could do the mutual respect handshake, all the tag teams start rolling out. First, we get the Hype Bros. Mojo says it's always about the same two teams. Then Jay tells Mojo he needs to go back to the sidelines, just like his NFL career. That brings out Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin. They come out. They tell the Hype Bros to get to the back of the line because they just beat them at the Hell in a Cell pre-show. Then the Usos call Chad Gable smart for getting Shelton Benjamin as his partner. And then they tell the Hype Bros to get to the back of the line. So the Fashion Police arrive, but and right before they could say anything on the mic, the Ascension comes out. The Ascension says that they are tired of being stuck in the wasteland. Enzo cuts the Usos cut them off and said they're all getting locked up in the New Day in the Usos penitentiary. They start running down each tag team, and then the New Day stops the Usos when they get to the Fashion Police and is like, the Fashion Police are cool. And then the Usos agree. The Usos challenge all the tag teams to get in and take a shot. And then, of course, Daniel Bryan comes out. Daniel Bryan says, tonight is not a good night for this. He thanks the Usos and New Day for their performance at Hell in a Cell, but tells them to leave the ring. Then Bryan makes a match between all the other tag teams to determine the new number one contender. So we have the Fashion Police, Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin, the Hype Bros, and the Ascension in a number one contenders match. Gable and Shelton Benjamin are looking for the Doomsday device, but Fandango tosses Chad Gable to the floor. Fandango goes for the Last Dance leg drop, but he misses. Chad Gable then hits the $1 million moonsault. Then him and Shelton Benjamin hit their version of the Doomsday device, and Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin will be challenging the Usos for the tag team titles. That's going to be a really good feud, really good athleticism, because, I mean, Usos and American Alpha had really good matches. So, you know, they're very familiar with Chad Gable and what he can do. Shelton Benjamin looks fantastic. He still looks like the guy that had maybe the best match ever on Monday Night Raw with Shawn Michaels, or at least the match that had the best finish ever anyway. So I'm really intrigued by what they got going on, and I think it may not be to the level of the New Day, but I think they will have some very standout matches in the next few months to come.
That's gonna be a solid program. We might just have the world's greatest tag team version 2.0 in this case, and this will be good for Chad Gable to up his promo skills with the Usos, because they're gonna test him. Now put up or shut up time after, because the New Day set the bar. The New Day and Usos set the bar, so now it's gonna be on Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin to bring out their best. I think this will be good for the SmackDown division. This will be good.
Shaz?
I agree, because we need another strong tag team. So hopefully this will sync up and work out, and we can build that division. Because I'm tired of Ascension too, outside of Fashion Police.
Goes to the back. Natalya's in the back. She's got her title. She's hugging it. She's caressing it. She's in love with the title. And that's when Lana and Tamina arrive. Lana says that the belt would look better on Tamina. Then Carmella saunters in with her Money in the Bank briefcase and just kind of reminds everybody that she's lurking. Natalya then starts to run down Charlotte, and then all of a sudden, here comes Charlotte. She ain't asking no questions. She just putting them hands on Natalya. So basically Natalya, before the attack started, she's talking to Charlotte and says that she asked if she broke Rick's pathetic heart again, and that basically made Charlotte snap. Charlotte put them fifth ward bees on her. And then all of a sudden, it looks like it's going to be a big brawl because, Tamina and Carmella kind of start trying to, I guess, pull Charlotte off of Natty. And then, of course, that brings Becky, and we just got a glimpse of Naomi running in to kind of even up the sides. Thought we were maybe going to get a six-woman match, but that didn't materialize. But it was good to see just that flash of Naomi. I've been missing the glow. Since she's lost the title, you know, she's kind of been de-emphasized on TV. So it was at least good to see that she was there. That they at least had a little bit of screen time. But, yeah, so that's that. Renee interviews Baron Corbin about his rematch with AJ Styles tonight. He makes fun of AJ Styles, Ty Dillinger, and all the Keyboard Warriors. And he says he plans to make AJ squander his opportunity tonight, just like he did with the Money in the Bank briefcase. We get Carmella versus Becky Lynch. Fashion cast. Carmella is back in the little one piece. Becky Lynch locks in the disarmor. Becky Lynch gets the win in like 3 minutes. Becky Lynch getting a win. You know, she hasn't really been wrestling on TV that much, so give her a little bone. Then we get to what we all came for. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Kevin comes out. He says a Hell in a Cell. He did what he said he was going to do. And he sent Shane McMahon to hell. Now Shane is gone and he's never coming back. He tells the fans to count their blessings because the fans almost lost him Sunday night as well. He said on Sunday, after he crashed through the table, that he was blinded by the light and he felt his soul separating from his body. He said he was at the pearly gates and he said he was aggravated because he had to stand in line and he hates waiting in lines. But then he said St. Peter saw him and called him forward to the front. And he said that heaven would love to have Kevin Owens, but earth needs him more. So it was then that he was gifted with his own guardian angel and sent back to us. And now he's here. He's here in Kevin's heaven, or as he likes to call it, the Kevin Owens Show. He then introduces his best friend and guardian angel, Sami Zayn. Then Owens, before Sami Zayn starts to talk, says that he had no idea he would come out to help Kevin at Hell in a Cell. Owens wants Sami to explain to the crowd why he took the actions that he did. But first, he wanted to thank him from the bottom of his heart. Sami said that Owens powerbombing him on the apron opened his eyes. So he's always tried to please people and the fans, tried to do the right thing, but it only brought him to mediocrity. While Kevin, doing all the dastardly things he has done, got him the IC Championship, got him the Universal Championship, and the U.S. Championship. Sami said he's always had a cured conscience, and he figured that, you know, he would get those same opportunities in maybe 4 or 5 years. He says that Shane told him everything he wanted to hear about coming over to SmackDown, and that's the reason why he came. But he says that was the last time they talked. And he said, you know, he's sure Shane's busy with all his other endeavors and, you know, surviving helicopter crashes and everything. But he said the real thing that opened up his eyes was last week when he tried to warn Shane about Kevin Owens and Shane blew him off. He said then he realized that Shane never cared about Sami Zayn, and he never was going to give him that great opportunity that he promised. So Sami said he wanted to see Shane win a Hell in a Cell. But when Shane knocked Owens from the cell and didn't take the pin when he had the match clearly won and climbed up to the top of the cell, that he was trying to end Kevin Owens' career, and he could not sit back and let his brother have his career ended like that. He said no matter what they've been in the past, best friends, rivals, that it's still his brother. And he said that's the reason why he came out there, saved Kevin, because it was the right thing to do. Sami said he thought he despised Kevin Owens, but he really despised that Kevin was right. Sami thanks Kevin, and then they have a big embrace in the middle of the ring. This was a tearjerker, man. I know people cry when they watch This Is Us. This was the wrestling version of This Is Us.
Yeah, and I'm glad them two are back together again, because it's been too long. It's been a while, and we need it. And, you know, almost, you know, shed thug tears. Yeah.
I like that he was, his whole reason was like, man, I'm tired of fucking losing. I'm tired of being looked over. I'm tired of getting passed over. I'm tired of, you know what I'm saying, the people that aren't as good as wrestlers or me, or people that I know I'm just as good as, always coming out ahead of me. And I came over here because they weren't treating me right on Raw. Then I come over here and y'all not treat me right here either. So he just felt it was time for a change. So I like his explanation.
Yeah, that was, I can't disagree with Sami. And honestly, I still, like, I don't see this as him being a heel. I just, like, it's just like, yo, enough's enough already.
So. Yeah.
I mean, I was okay with it until he took the "this is my brother" part and he tried to end Kevin Owens' career. I'm like, dude, he's tried to end your career. I don't care about that. But the approach of being mad at Shane and not getting the opportunity, totally bought into that. That made sense. But that "this is my brother and I have to have, you know, have his back" part and whatever.
All right. So we get the creative has nothing for you at the moment tag team of Randy Orton and Shinsuke Nakamura versus Rusev and Aiden English. Nakamura runs wild with his kicks and strikes. Then he landed repeated kicks to Aiden English's chest. He follows that with the corner knee strikes, and he sets up for the Kinshasa. Rusev makes the save, but Randy Orton catches Rusev with the RKO, and then Shinsuke hits the Kinshasa on Aiden English, gets the pin, and Randy Orton and Shinsuke Nakamura are victorious. That was just a match to, you know, fill time. They, you know, outside of outside of Rusev and Randy Orton, there's really no real beef between Nakamura and Aiden English, so they were just kind of there.
I'm tired of this. They need to do something with Shinsuke. Like, stop wasting our time with this shit.
Yeah, he shouldn't even been in that match.
No.
We have AJ Styles. He cuts a promo on Corbin, saying that Corbin didn't pin him at Hell in a Cell, and he makes mistakes, and he capitalized on those mistakes to win back the U.S. title. And then we get an interesting promo from the returning Luke Harper and Eric Roman. They have these great big warhammers. They say the virtuous will fall and the wicked will rise, as they are the Bludgeon Brothers. If you are familiar with ROH or New Japan, you will be familiar with War Machine, huge guys over 300 pounds. They're a tag team. Yeah, this looks like dollar store version of War Machine to me.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, they gotta impress me, because I ain't with the shits right now.
Then we have our glorious moment of the night. Bobby Roode comes down. He says his first pay-per-view match was glorious. That was until Dolph jumped him from behind after the match was over. So he calls out Dolph for a fight. Ziggler comes out. Of course, he does the same entrance that he did at the pay-per-view, which was the beginning of his old entrance, and then a record scratch, and then nothing. You know, basically, Dolph said that Roode looked like $1 million, but he says that he exposed Roode at Hell in a Cell. He dominated him and was the better man and the better wrestler. Then Dolph shows the footage of Bobby Roode using the tights to get the win at Hell in a Cell. Ziggler says that Roode is a cheater. Roode says that he was just smarter than Ziggler and did what he needed to do to win. So Dolph demands a rematch. Bobby Roode agrees to the rematch and says it will go the same way as the first match. Bobby Roode calls for them to have the match right now, but Dolph refuses, and Dolph says that he will determine when the rematch is. I actually made that sound really good and really coherent and really smooth. The actual promo was nothing like that. The first part was, but then the second part was really herky-jerky. I don't know what was going on. I don't know if Bobby Roode forgot what he was supposed to say or what, but yeah, they kind of struggled there at the end of this promo.
This is just Dolph Ziggler tainting NXT talent. I don't like... man, I don't know what's going to happen with this feud, but this is Ziggler's second NXT talent that he's not having a good feud with, just like we talked about. I don't know if it's him. Mm-hmm. I don't know if maybe the WWE style of doing things is overwhelming these guys. I don't know. But with Dolph Ziggler, the NXT talent is not. They're not getting the hot feuds to start their main roster careers going. Like, I don't know.
Pretty much.
Chess, yeah. That's your comment.
Yeah, pretty much. They don't know what to do with Dolph. So what is he gonna do with anybody else? I mean, okay.
So now it's time for our main event as the United States champion. Baron Corbin makes his first title defense in a rematch versus AJ Styles. AJ Styles locks in the calf crusher, but Corbin escapes. Corbin then starts laying in some strikes, but Styles hits the Pele kick, and Corbin rolls to the floor. Styles goes to the apron, but Corbin tosses him to the, body slams him off the apron onto the floor. They get back in the ring. Corbin hits the end of days, and he pins AJ Styles clean in the middle. After the match, Corbin gets interviewed and says to eat it, the title is his, and he will buy a boat and float on the River of Tears produced by the Internet Wrestling Community. So, good deal for Baron. The promo work was good on the mic at the end. That last line was really good. Like I said, if you guys follow him on Twitter, you know, he's got a lot of personality, a lot of charisma. He's really quick with his comebacks and stuff. So maybe if he can start bringing some of that to TV on a more regular basis now that he's a champ, and we'll have these, you know, these higher profile feuds and interview times where he'll have to carry the program by talking, that we'll get a lot more of his true personality to come out, and you know, people can start getting behind him a little bit, because I've always thought Corbin had the physical talents when he was in NXT. He just needed to work on, you know, his charisma a little bit and his promos. And I think he's done good on the promos, because he got a lot of chances on Talking Smack to kind of, you know, get comfortable. But he's definitely improved his charisma, and his matches are getting a lot better too. So I'm hopeful for Baron Corbin.
SmackDown could definitely use a more charismatic Corbin. And he's got it. Baron's got the, like you said, like, because I look at his Twitter, I'm like, holy shit, can we get this guy on TV? To hell with whatever they're writing. Like, just let him go. Just let him talk his shit on TV. But yeah, he's gonna be good. As long as he brings his mic skills up, I think he's gonna be one of those guys on SmackDown we're gonna be talking about, you know. He just gotta keep bringing that cockiness out, you know.
Chaz, I have another Fashion Cast discussion for you. What the hell was Renee Young wearing? She looked real Canadian. She had on like a velour freaking blouse and a leather skirt. What the hell?
It's getting ready to be winter. She's preparing early. Velvet with leather. It worked.
Okay. I don't know if it was velvet. I don't know if it was velour. But to me, it didn't go with no leather. It looks like it was another piece to it that she just didn't have on that day. Like, she couldn't find it when she packed her luggage and was like, oh, well, this will have to do.
Maybe she wasted something on her shirt and she just had to get what she could get.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, it just looked weird to me seeing her out there with that combination on. But anyway, that was SmackDown from this Tuesday. 205 Live, Renee again brings out Kalisto. Kalisto says there's finally a luchador cruiserweight champ. It was a dream come true. Promises to bring honor and respect to the title, unlike Enzo. Of course, that brings Enzo out. He's got a buddy with him, Arya Davari. Enzo does his usual thing, starts running down, you know, Kalisto, says it ain't a party without him. He says Kalisto may be the champion, but it's still the Zoe show. Enzo says that he main evented Raw 3 weeks in a row, and that he's the guy for the division. He runs down all the cruiserweights until Mustafa Ali got involved. Enzo says Kalisto had to lie, steal, and cheat to win. Kalisto said a win is a win, just like Enzo says. He says, I won and you lost, and Enzo has to agree and says, yeah, he's right. But he says that Kalisto is ugly under his mask, and he says that he was the one, Enzo said that he was the one who made the cruiserweight title sexy. Enzo says he gets mucho dinero, and the only green Kalisto has is guacamole. Enzo then says that Kalisto should just dip because of TLC. He's taking the title back. Davari then comes down to the ring, attacks Kalisto. Enzo joins in for the beatdown. Then Mustafa Ali arrives and makes the save and takes out Davari, and Enzo runs away. So set up the beginning of the night that will lead to a tag team main event. We get Rich Swann versus TJP in a 2 out of 3 falls match. TJP locks in a knee bar, but Rich Homie Swann, please say the homie, bridges out into a pin and wins the first fall. Then we start our second fall. Rich Swann hits a Mikinochu driver, and then he hits a running 450 for a 2 count. Swann then heads up top, and he hits the Phoenix Splash, and Rich Swann defeats TJP 2 straight falls to get the win. It's been a long time since you've seen a 2 out of 3 falls match not go 3 falls, so that was very refreshing. I'm glad Rich Homie got a chance to shine, because he's been kind of been on the back burner ever since he lost the title. So it was good to see him get a showcase match, and he delivered. Enzo and Davari meet up. Enzo calls Kalisto and Mustafa Ali, Mufasa and Simba. He said they're dirtbags. Drew Gulak arrives on the scene and says that he commends Enzo for sticking to his values. Gulak says he can't stand for Kalisto's chanting and poor fashion sense. Gulak may not agree with everything Enzo does, but he is like Enzo, woke. So I love Drew Gulak. He is so good. So Gulak then attacks Akira Tozawa during Akira Tozawa's entrance to the ring. He breaks his own rules, no interrupting. Gulak then slams Tozawa into the LED wall and hits Tozawa in the throat with his sign, which means that there will be no chanting from Tozawa. Cedric Alexander is asked about his actions from last week. Cedric said that he showed that he can be a man with a plan and proved that, you know, he can get his hands dirty and that he won't back down. Shout out to Tom Petty. He also says that Kendrick and Gallagher will make a new plan for him, and he promises to be ready. We get our main event, Kalisto and Mustafa Ali versus Enzo and Arya Davari. Davari rolls up Kalisto for 2. only gets a near fall. Kalisto then hits the Salida del Sol to pin Daivari, and Kalisto and Mustafa Ali are victorious. Standouts in this was a 2 out of 3 falls match. That was actually really good, even though TJP lost 2 straight falls. It's really good. And then for me, Drew Gulak is always a standout. Every week, whatever he does, I'm here for it. So,
yeah. TJ and Rich Swann's feud has been it's been good. The match has been fairly good. The only thing I appreciate was TJ ripping one of Rich Swann's dreads, and I was like, oh, nah, you gotta get some get back for that. But yeah, man, that 2 out of 3 falls match. Whew. I'm like, where do these guys go from here now? So. It'd be cool to see, but yeah, 205 Live was all right. I mean, despite, you know, Kalisto being champ and whatnot, yeah, after that, the rest of the roster, the rest of the talent brought it last night. So I guess they fired up now that Kalisto's champ. So everybody's trying to jockey in position after this feud is over. So, all
right. Next up, NXT. Starting off with my fave, Peyton Royce versus Liv Morgan versus Nikki Cross. Winner earns a spot in the Fatal 4-Way at TakeOver Houston. Tenari Conti, who was in the Mae Young Classic, all of a sudden comes out with Cole Riley and Bobby Fish, and she gets involved in a match. She pulls Nikki Cross out of the ring when Nikki's going for pinfall. This, you know, so they wrestle a little bit more. Nikki hits a spinning neck breaker off the second turnbuckle onto Liv Morgan, and she has her pinned when Conti pulls Nikki out of the ring again. This causes Nikki to chase Conti around the ring. Conti rolls through the ring, and of course, Nikki Cross follows. Well, when she's crossing through the ring, Peyton Royce catches Nikki Cross with the spinning heel kick. Then she gives her the fisherman suplex, and Peyton, a.k.a. Peyton Royce, gets the win, and she earned a spot in the Fatal 4-Way at Houston TakeOver. I'm so happy because I think Peyton Royce would be the champion.
Well,
Shaz, yeah. I know you watched this.
Huh?
I know you watched this, so what are your thoughts? Or what were you saying? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I said, I'm not surprised. You have been picking the ladies' champions. You know, you pick Alexa, you pick Sasha, so she probably will be. You've been right.
But yeah, I just think it.
I like Nikki Cross' character.
Yeah.
She's something different.
Nikki Cross looks like the women's version of Dean Ambrose with wrestling and a jean.
Yeah. I'm like, her and Dean must be comparing notes and shit.
I think.
I'd like to see them a mixed match on tag team. I think that would be funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Let them just go ape shit and put them in a hardcore match. See how that plays out.
I think that the way this is going to work is, I hope this is what happens. Peyton's going to win the 4-way. She's going to be the champion. She's going to, I don't know if they're going to have an elimination match or whatever they're going to do. But whatever's going to happen, hopefully Billie Kay helps her beat Ember, as pinned Ember. So now you get all these months of Billie Kay helping Peyton keep the belt, all the while they keep doing whatever they got to do to dodge Ember Moon, and then eventually Ember Moon gets the title shot and she wins it.
That's actually a solid story. Stretch it all the way to
WrestleMania weekend.
That's what I'm thinking, because that WrestleMania WrestleMania weekend is going to be crazy. You're going to have NXT. Mm-hmm. You're going to have, I think, New Japan's trying to come back to New Orleans. That's going to be a giant weekend for wrestling. So. Maybe, and that would, for Ember Moon to win the title the night before WrestleMania, but have that story where fans are emotionally invested, that would be ideal. Don't pull the trigger. Keep that story going. I know you're going to try to do something big for the Royal Rumble weekend, but yeah, hold out on Ember Moon being champion until WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah, I think that would just be the best story, the best matches, and then of course it would give Peyton some credibility and kind of establish her as a, you know, she can get 3 or 4 defenses in, and with a little help from her friend, just hang on. So it's built in right there for them. Hopefully they'll go that route.
Yeah.
Then we got a really fun match, Leo Rush versus the Velveteen Dream. It was supposed to be Lio Rush versus Aleister Black last week, but Velveteen Dream came down and attacked them, and so now they're, you know, trying to settle their issue. Lio Rush, man, just comes in here and he is whooping Velveteen Dream's ass. He hit him with about 8 moves, and I swear in about 3.5 seconds. But eventually the Velveteen Dream hits, you know, one big clothesline, kind of stops his momentum. Then he hits the Death Valley Bomb. Then he goes, he's standing on the second rope, the Velveteen Dream is. Then he hops up to the top rope. Then he comes off with a Purple Rainmaker elbow drop, and he gets the win. After the match, the Velveteen Dream sits down Indian style like Aleister Black, and he's telling Aleister Black to say his name. Say my name. He's kind of doing like the Muhammad Ali thing where he jumped in the Lio Rush and he was like, Velveteen Dream, say it. Velveteen Dream, say it. So, man, Patrick Clark is he's a bona fide superstar in the making. Can't not miss.
Yeah. I'm glad he finally found a character to really flourish with, because I'm enjoying Velveteen Dream as long as Triple H keeps grooming him and like keeps guiding Velveteen Dream. I guarantee you, by not this WrestleMania, but by the following WrestleMania, I think Velveteen Dream is going to be the next NXT champion.
Yeah, definitely could be.
Or I could see him like as he develops by 2019, he could be in the NXT title picture.
Mm-hmm. We get the scariest man on NXT, Lars Sullivan versus Danny Burch. Lars hits the side spine buster. Lars Sullivan gets the win. Just another, you know, win for him, building Lars Sullivan up. He is a monster. He's, you know, very credible. He's starting to, I think he's got something. He's a pretty good talker. So we'll kind of see, you know, what the future holds for Lars Sullivan. But, you know, he's just running through people, getting wins on NXT TV and, you know, boosting himself up. So we'll see where that goes. Next up. They do the swag like nobody can. It's the Street Profits.
Your favorite.
Yes, sir.
With the red cup and everything.
Yeah, well, they've begun to market a cup for them, so it's black now. But yeah, they missed a boat on that. But they're wrestling Daniel Smith and Marco Espada. Angelo Dawkins hits the Cyclone Splash in the corner, and then he hits the high-low with a pop-up powerbomb. Then my man, Montez Ford, comes off the top of the Frog Splash, and the Street Profits get the win. Every time we talk about Street Profits, of course, I always talk about Montez Ford. And if you guys watched the episode, you saw that great walk down the entrance ramp he had where he was dancing. It's my new favorite gift. Thank you for the people who I asked, and it was provided for. I appreciate y'all. So yeah, just the street, man. These dudes are so over. It's so fun. It's so lit. It's nothing but energy. And Montez Ford is definitely a big part of it. he walks out of the ring after the match and walks over to where Kayla and Mike Rome and one of the tech guys are sitting, and he's trying to get them to do the little shoulder shimmy or whatever. They go out in the crowd. They got the crowd all hype. Everybody's dancing and acting up, man. It's just a party when the Street Profits come out. And man, I love these guys. I love these guys so much, especially Montez Ford. You know, Dawkins finally got him somebody with enough charisma to actually make him relevant. So it's good for him. You know, tide rises all ships. But when Montez Ford makes his turn and goes solo, watch out.
Yeah. I just hope that by the time that happens, he is not working with Dolph Ziggler. Let's just we're gonna put that out there. Anytime any of these NXT guys come up from now on, just stay clear of Dolph Ziggler and or protest to Triple H that we don't want to work with Dolph Ziggler. Because
say no to Dolph, huh? Just say no.
Yeah.
The Street Profits give me the same vibe that Enzo and Cass had in NXT, where, you know what I'm saying, when they come out, everybody is just hyped. They ready to see them. They ready to see the match. They ready to be involved with whatever they're doing. So, you know, it's just so much energy when they come out. And You know, I can't wait for them to, you know, try to go for some titles or, and get into a real program, say, get a little bit longer matches, and we can kind of see what they can do, get some promo time, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So then we get our main event. We have Johnny Wrestling, Johnny Gargano versus Cien Almas in a rematch from TakeOver. This was a very good match. Cien Almas escapes the Gargano escape by giving Gargano a drop toe hold into the bottom turnbuckle. Then Almas hits two sets of running knees to the back of the head of Gargano, where he's laying face first in the turnbuckle. That looked really nasty. Then Cien Almas gets the win with the hammerlock DDT, and he spiked Gargano on his head. Johnny Gargano was selling, and if he didn't have a concussion, he did a damn good job of making his eyes look glazed over, because he was rocked from the knees to the back of the head to the hammerlock DDT. Johnny Gargano was on Dream Street. And, you know, Selena Vega, she tried to do the same thing that she pulled at TakeOver, where she had the DIY shirt on underneath her jacket. She pulled it open and tried to, you know, distract Gargano, but he was like, nah, not this time. And so, you know, it showed that he learned from the last time or whatever. Cien Almas, man, he's hitting his stride. It was kind of touch and go there for most of his time at NXT, but the last few months, ever since Selena Vega's come on board, you know, he's definitely been on an upswing. So good for him, good for them, and good match just all around, man. This was a fun match. Chaz, I know you saw this. Did you see the main event? Did you get that far?
Yeah, I did. And I like the combination of Vega and Cien. I like the fact that she's kind of the lead and she's the one about the mental game. Usually don't get that when the woman is involved. So I like that. It was a good in-ring match. So, yeah, I like their combination.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, with this Johnny Wrestling, please, please, just give him something more than being the guy that loves wrestling since he was 8. So if they call him up, it might fall flat, because it falls flat for just about everybody else, too.
Hopefully they don't call Johnny Gargano up until after Ciampa comes back and we get 2 or 3 matches between them two.
Yeah.
Got to have it.
Yeah, and I think the proper venue to have that match is WrestleMania weekend. Either that or the Rumble.
Right. All right. Yeah, when Tommaso Ciampa does come back, and if they can, you know, get that thing up and running, man, that's going to be the hottest program still in NXT, because you know, the people were so just, it was such a shocking turn, you know, and it's just unfortunate that Tommaso Ciampa got hurt during that match. But he's a tough SOB, man. He finished that match out and everything that happened post match with a bad knee. So,
yeah,
shout out to him. Next up, final review, Lucha Underground, Night 3 of Ultima Lucha. Trace, start out with the ladies, as we have Taya in honor of my SmackDown Smash correspondent, What is a Sexy Star, versus each other in the last Luchador standing match. They go hard. Taya gets busted open. They're chopping the hell out of each other. Their chests are all red. They're, you know, using all kinds of brass knucks and tables and glass bottles, and it's just a war. Taya and Sexy Star, they get up on one of the camera perches, and Taya had done the Kevin Owens stacking tables, so she had, you know, one table stacked on top of the other one, and they, you know, both go crashing through the tables. Both women are down. Sexy Star manages to get up at the count of 9, and she wins the last woman standing match. Like I said, really, you know, hardcore, hard-hitting match. Like I said, Taya got color. It's one refreshing thing about Lucha Underground. They are not afraid to let anybody get color. It doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman. So, you know, it's kind of shocking to the system the first time you see a woman in a wrestling match actually bleeding. But you watch Lucha Underground enough, you kind of get used to it. It's just, you know, these matches are just pure violence. And, you know, this one did not fail. So we get the Mac. AR Fox and Killshot versus the Reptile Tribe for the Reptile Tribe's Trios titles. AR Fox, big up to him, man, because he's out here 2 weeks after they had that brutal match where he got dropped on that razor wire, the board full of razor wire, and has lost skin and had bone exposed. Him and Killshot both were all wrapped up, taped up. AR Fox was actually wearing a t-shirt because his back is still all hamburger meat from landing on that barbed wire. There's a certain part though where his shirt gets ripped off, and of course, you know, he starts taking bumps, and he, you know, everything's painful because every time he lands on his back, You know, he's got these, you know, wounds back there. But AR Fox hits Pindar with the top rope finish fly. The Mac then gives Pindar a stunner, and Killshot finishes off Pindar with the double foot stomp from the top. Mac makes the pin, and the Mac, AR Fox, and Killshot are your new trios champion. Not quite the New Day, because, you know, AR Fox and Killshot really don't get along, and the Mac kind of got these guys forced on him by Cueto when he won the Battle Royal last week. But yeah, it's good to see some black excellence with some titles over in Lucha Underground. So they are your new trios champions. Then we get our main event, Son of Havoc versus Pentagon Dark, Gift of the Gods title, a ladder match. If you guys are familiar with Pentagon Jr., then you know that violence is not that far around the corner. This match had a whole bunch of that, a whole bunch of ladders, whole bunch of tables. Pentagon Jr. gives Son of Havoc, he does the, you know, four chairs together, you know, sets them out, two on each side facing each other, and he gives Son of Havoc the package power driver through those four tables. That's pretty nasty. But no, that wasn't good enough to win, though. He sets up a ladder bridge, and he choke slams Son of Havoc through a table from the ladder bridge that he set up. Then Pentagon Jr. climbs the ladder to claim the title and get the win. And now, with as long as he gives Dario Cueto at least a week's notice, he can redeem the Gift of the Gods title for a Lucha Underground title match. As the show goes off, we get the dark version of Vampiro giving Prince Puma a pep talk before his title match against Johnny Mundo next week in the finale, 2-hour finale of Ultima Lucha Tres. So, this was fun. Like I said, lots of violence in the first match and the last match. Pentagon Dark got his first ever title in Lucha Underground, so that was a monumental occasion. And next week is the big finale, where you're going to have Prince Puma versus Johnny Mundo. That's probably going to have like an hour time limit. You're going to have Cage, Jeremiah Crane, and Mil Mertes in a three-way for the gauntlet. And you're going to have Azteca Jr. versus Matanza Cueto in a steel cage. So those are going to be your matches next week for Lucha Underground. Before we go into the shout-outs, I just want to turn everybody's attention to the What We Are Watching hashtag. Underneath that hashtag, I had the best match I saw this week, which came from New Japan. It was Will Ospreay versus Kushida for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title. Coming into this match, Will Ospreay, no matter how good he is, no matter how hard he tried, no matter which tactics he used, could not seem to defeat Kushida. He is 0-4 heading into this match against Kushida. He's lost at the Best of the Super Juniors finals. He's lost at Overseas and Progress and all these different promotions. He's never been able to figure out Kushida. So they have a match for the title, and it was fantastic. So I would suggest everybody go over, watch that match. It's about 21 minutes, entrances, bell to bell, and it's action-packed from the get-go. So, nice. So do yourself a favor, watch that match, especially if you're not really big into New Japan, kind of want to get a flavor for kind of how they do things and how their presentation is different than WWE. That'd be a great match to kind of cut your teeth on, because it's a cruiserweight match, so there'll be the high flying and the cool moves and stuff, and, you know, nonstop action. So
and New Japan's been on a hot roll this whole year. We're not even done with it yet, so. That's a good match to get into for the weekend, actually.
So just check out the What We're Watching hashtag, man, and I'll try to put up the best matches that I get a chance to watch underneath the hashtag each and every week. So that's that. So at this point, we'll open it up to Shaz for her shout outs and thank yous.
Okay, I'm just gonna shout out the whole WrestleCast family, because you guys are the only thing keeping me in this. So I appreciate the takes, I appreciate the laughs, I appreciate all the petty. And thank you.
All right. And shout outs and thank yous.
Yeah, shout out to The Rock for his feud with Tyrese. Yeah, we gotta shout that man out. I don't know if y'all saw the video that Tyrese let go, but between that and the small video The Rock put out talking about big dogs eat and crying puppies stay on the porch. So.
Oh, you didn't see you didn't see the new one, huh? Where he was talking about he listened to the Black Rose album.
And it was shit. It was dog shit. They should have called it instead of Black Rose, Black Dog Shit.
Yeah. Channeling those old WWE promo days.
I don't think Tyrese want that smoke. He think The Rock is just some act. I'm like, nah, man. The Rock has dragged people through the mud. You better go talk to Triple H or, you know, Stone Cold. That's not what you want.
John Cena.
Yo, go talk to that man. He'll be in a Bumblebee film. You better go talk to him.
Yeah, so that has been pretty good comedy ever since. The whole beef is, if you guys aren't familiar, Tyrese, of course, is in Fast and Furious with The Rock. And The Rock, because of The Rock's scheduling, he and Jason Statham are actually going to have kind of like their own spinoff from Fast and the Furious that they're making before the next Fast and the Furious. And apparently Tyrese's money is starting to run low. And he's like, yo, man, we can't do this movie because The Rock got all this other stuff going on. And so The Rock has basically been handling him ever since. He even reached out to Tank, talking about, "Hey man, I think you can lower that. We need to maybe find you a spot in this movie."
I'm like, Tyrese, man, don't why are you blocking your blessings for? Let this man go and do this spinoff film, man. And right. that says something about Tyrese. Maybe his music career ain't really going the way it should, and maybe he needs this check.
Oh, he definitely needs this check because he wouldn't be crying so much about the Rock's business. He all up in The Rock pocket, you know.
Yeah, you know what's funny? Vin Diesel endorsed this Hobbs spinoff, so I don't know where this is coming from.
Well, see, Vin Diesel is a smart man. He understands that, you know. I think Tyrese has this inflated perception of himself. Like, him and Vin Diesel is the reason why Fast and the Furious, the last like two or three have kind of been the huge successes, but that joint was dead until Rock came on.
Pretty much.
Yeah, like, because if The Rock hadn't showed up after Paul Walker died, we wouldn't even be talking about spinoffs and the
20th release date. And a ninth one for that matter.
Yeah, we wouldn't be talking about
that. Don't they have one more after that? Aren't they doing
10? I think they're doing 10.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, so if I'm Tyrese, man, I'm like, don't fuck this up, because he could talk himself out of Fast 9.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Because he should have been asking for a guest spot. That's what he should have done.
Yeah. Because why
hold a paperclip or something? I don't know.
Yeah, if he really
favorite oil on your arm. I don't know. Let me come do something.
Yeah, because him calling out The Rock, first of all. I'm like, he thinks Rock is just some actor. This man has spent his career dragging people from, like, I don't know what's going on in Tyrese's head, but this is not the feud he wants. This is not it. Like, this is one of those things Tyrese just got to shut up on and just like go on tour or something and figure this out.
He's still talking.
Oh my God, oh my goodness.
Yeah, because. You know, the Rock hasn't had a chance to sun nobody in a long time. And you know what I'm saying? And his skills have not rested at all.
No. So. I like Hollywood, these actors seem to think that these wrestlers can't. Like, I was talking about this with somebody today. I'm like, you know, pro wrestling is the one occupation where there's just shit talkers all around the room. Like, it's like they all on a school bus and they just cutting ass on the nerd.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand Tyrese. So I'm like, you don't want to do this with The Rock. You do not want this. He's gonna treat you like Melvin. Gonna choke you from behind. He's like, yeah, call for your mama. Yeah, you don't want this with The Rock, especially if they see each other on set. I'm putting all my money on The Rock on this one.
And they got enough tension on set, so no.
Yeah. Tyrese, you might want to chill out before they just erase your whole role and be like, yo, you died.
Right.
They'd be like, we're gonna bring Han back, but we're gonna kill you instead.
All right. Now for my shout outs, I'd like to just thank everybody who joined us in a live tweet of Hell in a Cell, Cell Therapy Matters. It was a good time as always. Thanks for all the participation, all the gifts, all the, you know, commentary with color. As I said before, I was the winner of Who You Got. So one more for the good guy. I don't know what the totals were. Dee Dee, unfortunately, she couldn't make it to this episode. She has all the totals and how many matches I got right, but I got more right than everybody else, so that made me the winner. Shout out to everybody who joins us for Rawcast and SmackDown Matters. Shout out to all the people who, every week we get about 3 or 4 new people who discover SmackDown Matters. For some reason, that is a hashtag that just people come across and like, what the hell is this? And once they figure out it's about wrestling, a lot of people stick around and hang out with us. So big ups to all the new people who joined the SmackDown Matters live tweet every week. Shout out to the whole glow. We love y'all. All of y'all. So awesome. Y'all make it fun and give us a good female perspective on the, you know, ins and outs of professional wrestling and fashion cast and y'all's own personal creep cast. So nothing but love to y'all and everybody here on CSPN that is putting in work and creating content. And you guys support our sponsors, support all our other podcast hosts, whether you like sports or Ratchet TV or politics or Gearhead, cars, general conversation. We've got something for everybody here on CSPN. So please just keep supporting us, keep supporting our sponsors, keep downloading, subscribing, rate and review. If you're on iTunes, please give us 5 stars. You know, give a short little review so we can, you know, keep increasing our listenership and move up the ranks in the iTunes rankings and, you know, just get more eyes on us through the 5-star reviews. And that's about it. Next week, we will be episode 156, which was the 3-year anniversary of the WrestleCast. So it's going to be a party, y'all. So hopefully the wrestling is good, and we'll try to do something a little bit special for that episode. So for my guest host tonight, Shaz, tell them where they can find you again on Twitter.
1star23, that's 2 R's in the star.
All right. And for my man Anthony, tell them where they can find you on Twitter.
Y'all can find me at BrooklynSun on Twitter. I'm usually tweeting Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and pay-per-views, so...
All right. And for myself, Don Delorente, who you can find on Twitter at Don Delorente, this has been the WrestleCast, episode 155. Please stay tuned for the parting promo.
Before you start, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but before you start, I think you need to explain to everybody that I had no idea you're going to come out on Sunday night at Hell in a Cell, that I have no idea you were going to do that, that I had no idea why you chose to pull me away from certain destruction. You need to explain that to these people, but before you do so, I need to tell you from the bottom of my heart, Sammy, thank you.
Listen, hey, I'll explain everything, but it's funny that you're thanking me because actually, you powerbombing me on the apron a few weeks ago is what started opening my eyes to everything. You see, my whole life has been spent trying to please people. My whole career has been about pleasing all these people. No, and I tried to be the good guy and do everything the right way and put all your hopes and dreams and your morals and your beliefs and your ideals and your values, and I put it all on my shoulder, and I embarked on a long, arduous journey, and it brought me all the way to... mediocrity. It brought me to mediocrity. Meanwhile, Kevin Owens, my counterpart, became the Intercontinental Champion. He became the Universal Champion. He became the United States Champion. But that's okay because I get to sleep at night. And I genuinely thought that my time had come when Shane McMahon invited me, gave me the opportunity to come to the land of opportunity, SmackDown Live. Oh, and did he put on a show for me. He told me everything that I wanted to hear about how Raw had been mistreating me and misusing me, which was true, mind you, but how SmackDown Live would give me the opportunity and the respect that I deserved. Well, that was the last meeting I ever had with Shane McMahon. When I saw Shane McMahon in the hallway and I tried to warn him about what Kevin Owens is capable of, and I think we all saw what Kevin Owens is capable of at Hell in a Cell. I tried to warn him and he brushed me off, ignored me, said, Sammy, you know, you worry about you and I'll worry about me. And that's really when I realized Shane McMahon never cared about me. He never really cared about me. He never really wanted me to get an opportunity. Now, let me tell you something. Kevin Owens has been a lot of things to me over the years. He's been my best friend. He's been my bitter rival. He's been everything in between. But the one thing he's always been and will always be is my brother. When I saw Shane McMahon up there, I knew he didn't just not care about me. He didn't care about you either. He didn't care about anything but himself. He didn't care about avenging the McMahon name. He just wanted to end your career, or worse. And so I saved my brother because it was the right thing to do. I saved my brother because Shane McMahon had become an absolute psychopath. And Kevin, for the longest time, I thought I despised you. Now I realize I just despised the fact you were right. Now I don't think there's much left to say other than... thank you.